This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Blue Wire.
What's up, guys? Welcome to this podcast. My name is Solomon Elite, at Solomon Elite NBA on Twitter. Here joined by Forrest Walker, at Do Nots on Twitter. How you doing, man?
I've been better, but I've been worse. I got a little bit of a head cold today, so everyone gets to hear a nice deep voice. It's not too bad.
Well, it is Monday, and you have a podcast in your feed, like we promised. Isn't that cool?
We always keep our promises.
Yes, yes, I am very excited to get going. Now that we can finally talk about balls going into hoops and not geopolitical issues and trade wars and foreign policy, like it's so great that we can talk about basketball. Isn't that great for a change?
Yeah, there has been a number of games of basketball, actual real NBA basketball that counts. It's awesome.
Substantial basketball. Basketball that actually matters in 6 months.
Yeah. I mean, it might be just preseason, according to Kawhi Leonard, but this does count in the standings.
Right. So we have two Rockets games in the books. Rockets versus the Bucks and Rockets versus the Pelicans. Both home games. The Rockets are 1-1 right now. They look a little shaky. What are your overall takeaways from week one?
Oh, boy. Well, weirdly, I felt like the game that they looked better in, they lost, and the game they look worse in, they won, probably due to quality of opponent.
It's funny. I feel the exact same way. It's weird. Like, that Bucks game, I thought they looked really good for three quarters. Like, really good. Like, contender good. And in that fourth quarter, just things just kind of melted away from them. And then against the Pelicans, they were just kind of really shaky on defense, and it seemed like it carried over from that fourth quarter, that Bucks game.
Yeah, that game, in an overarching sense, really looked like a game that they were required to play by league rules.
Yeah.
So they kind of turned it on at the end a little bit when they just really had to get it done. But most of that game, they just looked like they were there because there was no other choice.
Isn't it strange how like the Rockets have played the Pelicans like really close for like 3 years now? Like, do you think that's an Alvin Gentry thing?
Could be. I mean, he's a pretty quick guy, and he's got some talent down there, and they have some shooting. Oh boy, they have some shooting, especially against Houston.
Right, and I'm more so referring to like the fact that he and Mike coached together in Phoenix. Like, do you think it's like
he knows all his tricks?
Yeah. Like, it sounds like a really stupid thing to suggest, but like the more and more like games we get of Rockets and Pelicans, like the more it feels like. This is the one team that they can't blow out. Like, this is the one team that they can't just get a strong lead against and contain. Like, this team just keeps on fighting, no matter who's on the court. It was like this when Anthony Davis was on the Pelicans, when DeMarcus Cousins was on the Pelicans. And last night, it was like that with Jrue Holiday and Zion missing the game. And they still managed to be competitive. I think the pace doesn't bother the Pelicans at all.
Yeah, and this team especially is very happy to run. I think you might have something there, and it may speak to a larger concern about D'Antoni's willingness and ability to alter his rotations to the situation, that it might just be that, you know, Gentry kind of knows what he's going to do in most cases, and D'Antoni is happy with being predictable, I think. I think he just wants to find a predictable that wins.
So let's talk about that first game against the Bucks. What's one thing that really stuck out to you on the opening game?
Honestly, that they just forgot how to shoot toward the end of the game. Right. I cannot believe that everyone except Russell Westbrook went 1 for 15 in the fourth quarter, and he was what, 4 of 7 in that quarter?
It is truly bizarre that James Harden and Russell Westbrook just swapped shooting percentages from three. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, it's crazy and also not great.
That game in particular, like the second half, like the Rockets, like I feel like if their shooting was on par, like with what it normally is, like if they're shooting like 35 to 37% from three, I kind of feel like their defense is better. And like I really do feel like if they hit some of these shots to kind of put the Bucks away, specifically those Eric Gordon shots in the fourth quarter, which were really, really odd. Like he was really open. Like he was like 1 for 4 in the fourth quarter or something like that. He missed all four, and those were all clean looks. And I really feel like if they hit those shots, if James Harden hits his shots, like, this ends up being closer to a 20-point blowout than it was a loss. Like I really do feel like the defense was feeding off of the offense struggling so poorly in that first game.
Yeah, and I think we've seen this for a number of years, too. Like, the Harden Rockets in general, when their shot stops falling, their defensive ability and effort fall off, too.
Everything just falls apart, right?
Yeah, it looks like they... I don't want to say they hang their heads, but just, like... I think that, like, a sense of doom seems to arrive, right? Like, once they can't hit their shots, everything's frustrating. Like, the thing that they're supposed to be good at is not working. And it just looks like they lose focus or something, right? Like, it just kind of comes apart a little bit. And this has happened as far back as the bad year that we've seen this happen, right? Where, like, the first thing to go is the shot. And then once the shot goes, everything else can, like, fall apart as well.
Right, like... And with Mike D'Antoni teams in particular, like, they seem to play on a string in that their offense feeds their defense. So when their offense is doing really well, their defense tends to be solid. Like those two things are interconnected. Like, it's never – you never get one year where their offense is, like, elite and their defense is god-awful. You never get that. It's always in the middle. And it seems to be because that offense – like there's like a momentum shift there, right? Like it when your offense is clicking, it makes you feel good, makes you want to try on defense. It's felt like that for Mike D'Antoni these past 3 years in Houston.
Yeah, and also of course the obvious that if you hit shots, they're taking the ball out of the basket, which is a lot easier to set up your defense for than if it's a live ball.
Right. Are you concerned about their defense as a whole these past two games? Like just as a general question, like is this a red flag, how they've played?
I think it's like a yellow flag. I'm about as concerned with the defense as I have been for the last, like, season worth of time, I guess, in that they have a pretty similar lineup of guys, and their defense probably has a pretty similar ceiling to what it was last season, which how good that is still kind of unclear. It seems like it might be good enough to get some real things done, but... Yeah, they look, like I said, like they're about as good. They have about as good of potential on defense as they were last year. It's just kind of more of the same, which is not exactly a red flag because they did pretty well despite that, but it's also not good because they really would like to have actively good defense. So I say a yellow flag. It's something to be concerned with, but may not be a huge problem depending on how good their offense can be.
You know, it's funny. I half agree with you because, like, I think it's a yellow flag. I kind of don't really – my thoughts really haven't changed on what I think their defensive ceiling could be from preseason. But I also think that their ceiling might be higher because if you look at their defensive rebounding rate, they're second in the league. And that has a lot to do with –
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, like that has a lot to do with their new additions. They're just more athletic. This is a much more athletic basketball team than what we saw last year. I think if that stays the same, I think they can clean up a lot of this. I really do. I'm watching their defense schematically. I don't think there's anything principled wrong with it.
Probably not. I mean, my biggest concern regarding rebounding is that I've also... Tyson Chandler has looked very good for rebounding out there, but that's a guy that you can't count on day game in and game out. You know, it's a guy who's gonna miss games just because he is extremely old, so he's helping with that as well. but he won't always be able to do that.
It's funny. I had Tyson Chandler on my rundown because, like, he's looked so good these first two games. And
it's a great role for him.
Yeah, and I had the same thought that you just expressed right there. Like, can you count on this keeping still? Like, can you count on this staying the course? Like, he looks so damn springy right now. And maybe that's just a case of him not playing basketball, really, for a while. But, I mean, like, I don't know. On offense at least, he looks good. Like, defensively, it's obviously, like, you don't have much hopes for a backup center at age 39, like, to do much defensively, right? And I don't think that was really being asked of him when the Rockets acquired him. But offensively, he looks like a really solid role man. Like, you see him connecting for lobs with Russ and Harden, and that's something you didn't see from Nene these past 2 years. Like, I feel like at least, at the very least, you can say Tyson is a small upgrade over Nene in that department.
I think so. He's got a basketball IQ, which is clearly very high, right? He's been through this so many times, and he knows, like, what the prudent thing to do is. I mean, you can look at the way he rebounds, right? He rebounds not by being, like, the fastest dude on the floor, but he just has a great feel for where the ball's going to go and knows how to, you know, manage his body properly. So I think he is a very positive pickup. It's too bad that he's 39, but that's why they were able to get him for that price. So
yeah, it surprised me because I got to be honest, I did not expect much from Tyson. Like, I really didn't. Like, I thought he was going to be more so when Nene was last year, and which was fine and was probably not enough for what they really needed at that position at backup center. But this might be enough to hold to carry them over until they try and get bodies midseason, which they're obviously going to do. But I think the Rockets are good there at center. Like, this was kind of a concern for a lot of people. Like, are the Rockets kind of shallow at center? And I'm like, I think they're kind of fine. Does Mike D'Antoni at the moment trust Clint Capela to play a lot of minutes? Because talked to him at practice today, and it seemed like he's not really satisfied where Clint is defensively. And you watch that opening game, and Mike D'Antoni was closing the game with P.J. Tucker guarding Brook Lopez on these post-ups, and he stood by that decision post-game. He just said, nope, like, we like that lineup against that matchup. Like, that's something we want to do. And it's kind of bizarre because, like, that's kind of what Clint Capela is there for. He's there to be big. He's there to try and guard those kind of guys.
It's funny because it's kind of like he's going undergoing a metamorphosis to flop around what we thought about him, in that he was previously thought of as, you know, a pretty good rim protector and with a lot of potential there, and now he's really good at rim running. And he's just like, he's excellent at getting down the court extremely quickly and finding his way through the basket for the lob, and it feels like his defensive aptitude is, if not worse, definitely much less trusted by the team at this point.
I still have confidence in Clint's defensive potential. And that's because I've seen good years from him defensively. And I also know his capabilities when the Rockets tend to switch. Like, he is just so good at that particular skill. His rim protection is still to be, you know, that still needs work. And I think that's what Mike D'Antoni is referring to here, because the Rockets are not switching as much as they have in the past. They're playing this more traditional drop coverage scheme mixed in with switching. And with the drop coverage scheme, you need to be good at rim protection. And Clint hasn't been able to justify that so far. Now, it's only been two games. I'm trying not to take too much away from it. But the Rockets playing small ball a lot is definitely something that you've noticed. Mike D'Antoni even hinted at possibly playing Cephalosha at center at some point this season, which a lot of people are upset at. And I'm just kind of like, hey, he played that during the preseason. Like, why is that such a surprise to you people? Like, this is not some, like, breaking news. Like, this is something he was definitely thinking about. And he's, I don't know, like, I'm not opposed to seeing that look, but the lack of confidence in Clint Capela is definitely something of note so far. But it's only been two games. It's tough to tell.
Yeah, we'll have to see some more games to see how it goes. And we'll get our chance, because guess what? They have 80 more of these things.
Yeah, they do have 80 more of these things. One other thing that stuck out at me, Russell Westbrook looks like really good. Like, really good.
He looks a lot different than in preseason. I mean, I guess that will fit in with the idea that he's kind of figuring out how he's going to work with these guys. But I am surprised by how much better he looks than he did during the preseason, in which he still looked like he was kind of figuring out, and also was hoisting a lot of poorly planned out three-pointers. Like, the thing about Russell Westbrook is that he's great when he goes to the rim or hits those threes anyway.
Yeah, and Mike was suggesting that that Russ wasn't really – he was holding back until the season started. Like, because he plays much better when there is a pressure of the bright lights. And I guess this is kind of proof. Like, I guess he was holding back on everybody. Because I was with you. Like, during the preseason, I was like, man, he looks really rough. Like, there were a lot of people going into the season that thought that Russ was due for a comeback season of some sort, including Matt Moore, who was on the podcast this summer. But in the preseason, that looked really, really suspect. And the first two games, like, I gotta be honest, I didn't expect any game this season that Russell Westbrook would outplay James Harden, and he's done that in the first two games. It's really encouraging. Like, he looks really, really springy. He looks really good first two games.
Yeah, I mean, he was the only guy who could do anything at the end of that Bucks game, and he was just really active the whole time against the Pelicans, especially on a night when they very much needed somebody to do something against the Pelicans, because it was not coming from James Harden.
Yeah, and Russ was there. He was to his credit, he really showed out in that second half specifically, because the Rockets were in danger of losing that game. I mean, they lost the lead, and it seemed like the Pelicans were going to build upon it and possibly run away with it. And Russ really pulled them out of it and helped them win that game. And I'm not sure what would have happened if Russ wasn't there, to be honest. They probably lose that game. They probably lose that game by a lot. And it's encouraging, because there are a lot of people who thought, including myself, that the Rockets had made a mistake in that trade. Like Chris Paul looked really good on night one. He looked really good for the Oklahoma City Thunder on night one. And I'm sure there are a lot of Rockets fans who noticed that. And for a lot of people, there was this worry that the Rockets had made this mistake in trading away Chris Paul. And it seems like through the first two games, we at least don't have any evidence that that is the case.
Yeah, kind of so far so good on Russell Westbrook. And we'll have to see more as we move onwards, because, I mean, these are the kind of games that would happen in Oklahoma City, and we in Houston were not as excited about when he was not on our team.
Well, don't say we. don't say
okay.
We.
Yeah, okay, fine. Well, those are the kind of games that a lot of people in Houston were not as excited about when he was in Oklahoma City. Yeah. And we'll see how it continues. I mean, he's definitely racking up triple doubles. I'd like to see him rack up triple doubles in games that they win a little more comfortably than that Pelicans game. So if we can see some of that, I think that would be great. Though I feel like we don't really have a great feel for like how much James Harden's bringing to the table yet either. Though,
are you concerned at all about James Harden? Let's talk about that right now, because he's shot the ball really poorly in these first two games. I think he's shooting like under 15% from three.
Yeah, he's like 3 for 23 or something like that. Something crazy.
It's been really bad. Are you at all concerned about that? I'll be honest. Like, I've seen James Harden have stretches like this before from three, and for me, when I saw those shooting numbers, I'm just kind of like, yeah, but like, do I really suspect this to continue? And I'm just kind of like, no, I don't. I don't even have like a yellow flag for this.
It's here.
Yeah, it's just a thing that I suspect to go away. But are you at all worried about it right now?
I mean, it's not like he's taking terrible shots, you know? If this was because he was taking like a pile of one-legged threes all the time and they looked awful, that'd be a different matter. But he's basically just doing the same stuff he did last year and the year before that. It's just not going in right now. So, yeah, I don't know what else to do with it other than just wait and see how long it goes. Like, if this really continues on for a while, then I'll be concerned. But I don't know. I mean, right now it just looks – maybe they're just suffering from the cross-Pacific curse, you know, where teams who go and play over in Asia in the preseason seem to be sluggish at the start of a season. So – maybe they're just still recovering from that. I don't know. It depends how long it goes on. But for now, it's bad shooting is bad shooting. And you can't really do anything about it or honestly worry about it very much.
Yeah, you know what's funny? The Rockets, before they went on that trip, they denied that it would be a thing, like that they would come back sluggish. And literally the first game back, they looked really sluggish. And Mike D'Antoni was just like, yeah, it might be jet lag. Like, it was just fun. Like they did not realize how much of a toll would take on their body until they actually did it. And it might be a thing. It might be a thing. Like, we've definitely seen enough data to see that it's affected a ton of NBA teams in the past, especially contenders that want to start the season off strong. They've had this issue with coming back from these Asia trips, really jet lagged, and you're just kind of disoriented when you come back from a trip like that. Your hours aren't correct. You don't know when it's morning, when it's night. You're sleeping at odd hours. Like, it's definitely a thing on your body.
I'd say, yeah. I mean, and the fact that everyone's shooting badly also suggests that maybe it could be some of this. And you know, they'll round back into form, I would guess. I mean, if we get to be like, you know, it's a couple weeks into November, they're still shooting horrendously every night, then we have a much different discussion. But right now, it's a couple of games them shooting badly, and it's not really that surprising. And moreover, it's funny, it kind of backs up one of the theories of how to guard the Rockets, which is that you just hope they miss their threes. And if they miss their threes, then they're probably going to have a hard time, right? So, The first couple teams have to some degree taken that approach that, well, if they miss their threes, we got a chance. And they both had a chance. But if they stop missing their threes, we'll kind of see what this team looks like at the top of its potential.
Yeah, it's funny. It's not just James Harden. Like, this kind of extended to Eric Gordon, too. Eric Gordon shot the three ball really poorly these first two games as well. All the attention's been on James Harden, obviously, but Eric Gordon has been just as bad. And this is a thing with Eric Gordon. He started last season shooting the three ball really poorly too. Now eventually he bounced back from it and shot really well towards the end of the season. But this is a thing. Like, this is a thing that such a monitor, because if they continue to shoot poorly, it's going to take a lot more from guys like Russ, from guys like Daniel House, from guys like Clint Capela to help them drag out of it, because it's really tough for an offense like Houston to be efficient when they're shooting so poorly, when they're shooting that poorly, and your offense is so heavily predicated on shooting the three ball. It really does become a thing of like, yeah, we need these guys to really get it together here.
Yep. The bad news is that maybe they don't, but the good news is they almost certainly will.
Humans have been shaving for thousands of years, and the secret to a great shave? It hasn't changed much. The ancient Greeks didn't need flex balls or heated handles, and neither do you. That's why Harry's doesn't overcharge you to add gimmicky features to their razors. They focus on delivering what actually matters: sharp, durable blades at a fair price. I love Harry's because it gives me a close shave, easy glide, low price. Do us a favor and check out harrys.com/bluewire for your free trial today. Harry's is a return to the basics. Quality blades for just $2 a pop. It's super convenient. Blades refilled are delivered directly to your home on your schedule. And you don't even need a subscription. There's literally no risk here, guys. Forrest, would I lie to you? Don't answer that. But seriously, if you don't like your shave, they'll give you a full refund. It's as simple as that. Listeners to my show can redeem their Harry's trial set at harrys.com/bluewire. You'll get a weighted ergonomic handle for a firm grip, 5-blade razor with a lubricating strip and trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel with aloe to keep your skin hydrated, and a travel blade cover to keep your razor dry and easy to grab on the go. Go to harrys.com/bluewire to start shaving better today. Let's talk about how the Rockets have fared opening week as compared to the other contenders.
Well, it's surprising. Midway through the week, the verdict would have been a lot worse. But right now, it's actually fairly encouraging, I think, given how much everyone else has looked shakier than expected.
Yeah, it's funny because like, you don't want to take away too much from the first week of the season. Like,
yeah. things happen.
Every year, like, we're constantly reminded, don't take too much from the first week of the season. Don't take too much from the first week of the
season.
Remember when the
Magic were, like, 5-0 after the first couple of weeks a few years ago?
Right, the Frisky Magic. I remember that. Yes, yes. Like, this is a thing constantly. Like, we put too much weight into the first week of the season. In reality, we won't know what to think of things until, like, 20 games in. Like this is something that I try to hammer home every single year. It often gets misplaced. This is something that just needs to be reminded to fans. Like, nobody knows anything yet. Now we're starting to collect data. It's very preliminary data, but until like mid-November or even probably until December, we're not going to know much about the NBA and where things stack up. Now, as far as the other contenders, like, if you look at the bottom of the Western Conference, the Lakers are the 6th seed, the Blazers are the 7th seed, the Jazz are the 8th seed, the Rockets are 10th seed, and if you look at the Western Conference, the Bucks are the 6th seed, the Magic are the 8th seed, the Nets are the 10th seed. A lot of good teams are playing really poorly right now, and I guess that gives you some sort of buffer to catch up later on the season.
Yeah, I mean, how much catch up there is after being 1-1 instead of 2-0? Right. It's right. It's more, I guess, like how they've gone down, right? Like seeing teams be feisty, like watching the Suns beat the Clippers was surprising. Surprising. It's stuff like that, right? That no one has really looked definitively the best of anybody. The Clippers kind of looked like that initially, but that weird Suns loss brings some question marks. It's not so much that we really know a lot, but what we don't know. And what we don't know is that for sure the Rockets are like not one of the top teams.
Yeah. And I was kind of with you there. Like I was someone who predicted going the season that I had the Clippers as my number one seed in the Western Conference. So those first two games really were a good confirmation bias for me. Yeah. Again, we have no idea. We have no idea. The Rockets look really shaky defensively right now. And they still have a lot to clean up. But again, we're in week one, and there are several weeks to go before we have any idea what to make of things. What have you thought about James Harden and Russell Westbrook as a duo? How has that synergy been to you?
Oh, man. That's the hardest question yet, because I don't really know how well to judge it due to the aforementioned James Harden shooting woes, right? I feel like we're watching this car fire on, like, 5 out of 6 cylinders, and it's kind of going, but it could be a lot better. So I really want to see what it looks like once James Harden is actually putting, you know, the fear of God into opposing defenses when he's out there instead of being given what he wants and clanking it all the time. The thing I've liked the most about this duo is how good each of their chemistry is with Clint Capella on offense.
Yeah, Russ is really starting to get together with his teammates. Like, that is a big takeaway for me from week one. Like he is finding guys for really crisp passes that were often not ready for it in the preseason. Like he was so fast in the preseason that it was kind of a system shock, right? Like guys weren't yeah. ready to catch these passes. And now these guys are getting to their spots quicker, like PJ Tucker, like Eric Gordon, like Clint Capela, like Tyson Chandler. Like even he had some lob chemistry going with Tyson Chandler. Like I think that's encouraging in that, like, for the Rockets, like he is starting to blend in with the other guys really well. I'm with you. It's really tough to tell, especially since the Rockets run the stagger, how well they look together. I think they've looked fine, but in kind of like a B-, C-plus kind of way.
Yeah.
Like, they're not clicking in the traditional sense. It's very much your turn, my turn, and they're playing so fast that half-court offense isn't a focus of the offense. Like, they don't really have to, you know, they don't really have to clean that stuff up yet because they're just so far and above, like, one of the fastest teams in the NBA that they don't have to worry about half-court offense. When they do, I think we'll start to figure things out. One thing I've noticed is that both guys off the ball have not been great. No. Russ has been better than Harden in that I've seen him make a couple of cuts to the basket and James try to throw it to him for a lob. Like, you've seen a couple of stuff from Russ. a couple of cuts from Russ off the ball. But in general, both of these guys have not really shown that they're ready to play. I can't think of the word. They're just not moving. They're not moving in the way that you want them to move off the ball. Now, again, it is week one, and I hate to couch everything we say with that, but it is important to note. But that's just one thing I've noticed. Like it's hard to tell because they're staggering and they're playing so fast. But in the limited moments that we've seen, it's been kind of clunky.
Yeah, I mean, two games are two games. So it's just not nothing, but it's not a ton either. I think that's about right. They look like they like to play together, but it does seem like they haven't really figured out how they're going to coexist yet. They're not. The way I put it is that they don't look like they're lifting each other up, right? They look like they're coexisting and not synergizing, I guess.
That is a good way to put it. There was a play in that Bucks series where, like, it was like 7 minutes to go towards the end of the third quarter, and they're like, Harden threw a lob to Russ. Like, it was obviously in transition, and that's where you saw like a glimmer of hope of their synergy, and you saw several plays in that same Bucks game where Russ would find Harden out in the perimeter for three, and that's kind of what you like to see. Now, the problem is these plays have been kind of sprinkled in as opposed to ever present, right? So yeah. The hope is for the Rockets that these plays become more common, and that they, like, right now they're at like a 5%, right? You want them to get at like 80 to 90 by the playoffs, but this is going to be a work in progress. The most encouraging thing for me is that Russ looks as good as he has been. Like, there was kind of the thought in everybody's head, and I know no one ever really expressed it. Like, there was the idea that, hey, maybe Russ just isn't in his prime anymore. Maybe this is the start of his decline, right? Like, that was a thought that a lot of people had. And so far, that thought has been incorrect, right? Like, Russ looks really good.
He's hitting free throws, and right. That's very good because it suggests that maybe his shot is not as busted as it was.
And he's hitting threes, which...
Yeah.
Yeah. God knows how long that'll last, but he's hitting threes at a 40% clip.
But on the other hand, James Harden will go back to normal too.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, like, I don't really know how to end this podcast other than we're still very confused.
Whole league is confusing, not just the Rockets either.
Right. I want to ask one more question before we leave. The point of emphasis thing.
Yes.
Right, so... This has been a thing, like, that I noticed on opening night and has carried through for the Rockets, and it's been carried through for a bunch of other teams. Like, this is the offhand stuff is being called a lot more. And what I'm really talking about is kind of the push-offs that aren't really push-offs but look like push-offs because your arm and your elbow are kind of angled a certain way. So at first glance, it looks like you're pushing off, but it really isn't. Like, those calls are being called a lot. And it's affected everybody in the league.
Yeah,
like,
it's not just James Harden either. Yeah, yes. It's a lot of players.
Like, Giannis has been fouled out twice so far, and they've only played two games.
Yeah, that's wild.
Yeah. So this is a thing that you're seeing a lot. Do you expect this to be a trend that holds? Like, are these points of emphasis gonna come up to bite the Rockets all season, or is it just a beginning of the season thing? And you think these calls are gonna be called less?
I mean, they'll be called less. How much less is a question. I feel like when these points of emphasis happen, they usually have like a slightly higher baseline than the previous season of calling these things over the course of the season, but not much. Once it's like January, it's not going to be a thing anymore. It'll probably barely be a thing in December, honestly. You just wait until it figures itself out over the course of like maybe November. And then we won't see James Harden getting so pissed off he hits himself in the face with basketballs anymore.
That was funny. That was funny. I mean, Josh Hart's face was just so priceless there.
Like, it's like, okay. Like,
he's like, what are you doing, my guy? it has gotten ridiculous at some points. Like there was the play in that Rockets-Pelicans game where James Harden just had a clean point-blank layup and got called for an offensive foul. and that's the kind of stuff that I'm sure for Mike D'Antoni and the Rockets is really frustrating. Like that stuff needs to get cleaned up by the officiating crews. Like, and I've seen, by the way, Rockets fans have a lot of paranoia with officiating. So I want to say this, like, I'm watching these other games, calls like that are being made.
Yeah. They're doing it league wide.
Layups like that are getting called for offensive foul a lot. And maybe the anger there is like, well, sure, but they need to fix that. And I think that's a fair point. But I want to say that the league is not just singling out James Harden here. This has been a league-wide thing. This has been incredibly frustrating to watch as a basketball fan, just flipping through these games. Like, I was really excited for opening week, and I'm just like, okay, so we're gonna call these now. Are we really yeah, gonna call this stuff now?
The offensive fouls may be one of the least fun things in basketball, second only to reviewing of calls, which thank God we have more of that this season.
I kind of like that there's a challenge rule, to be honest. I kind of like it. But at the same time, these guys are using it so early in the games. Like, these coaches don't really know. Like, there's no clear grasp of when to use it. Mike D'Antoni used it in that first game right away.
If they changed the call, it was the right time, right?
Yes and no, because there is a thing to the importance of the call, right? The importance of the time of the game. And D'Antoni talked about this after the game, right? There was a point where, like, yeah, there's always questionable calls in the second half. And if things aren't going for you and a call gets flipped, that could be a huge momentum shifter.
It really mattered between the Mavs and the Blazers.
Right, yeah. So, this is definitely something that the coaches need to get used to, right? In terms of the point in the game, when to call it, the kind of play, because there are plays that are, they're more pivotal to call it than other plays, right? Like an and-one layup, right? That you don't think is a foul, but it gets called for an and-one layup, right? Like, that's 3 points on the board.
Yeah, if you can erase 3 points, that's pretty big. I would suspect that we might also see coaches using it to kind of highlight or push back against, like, things being called a particular way. Right. Like, if they see that a call keeps going against them in some interpretation, like the refs are interpreting things in a way it's not conducive to their team, maybe they wait until it's a pretty nasty example of it, maybe midway through the game or something, and then let the refs go and see it and say, like, oh, yeah, this is what's happening. You know, oh, this guy's undercutting my players, you know, when they're shooting threes or something like that. And kind of use it as like a point of emphasis to sway the refs to move things in their direction, perhaps. I wouldn't be surprised if we see some of that kind of like strategic thinking, or like you said, like the tactical plan of wait until a high impact moment to pocket it until like the fourth quarter.
Right. Yeah. And I suspect that's what D'Antoni's going to do going forward. Like, I don't think he's going to make a first half challenge for a while again, because like I suspect that he and other coaches are finding out that, man, this thing's a real weapon here.
It's really weird they lose it if they're right. That's what's weirdest to me.
What do you mean?
Well, like in some sports, you know, like you do a coach, like you do a challenge, and if it goes your way, right, if the ref says, oh, you were correct, that is actually how it should have been called, then they still keep their challenge flag.
Oh, okay. No, I'm with you. So. Yeah, I actually like it. Like, I don't want to see too many of these, right? Like I think that was the idea going into this. Like, that's why coaches weren't given two. That's why that's why this was tested in the G League first. Like, that there is kind of a thing of, you don't want to affect the aesthetics of the game too much. You don't want to slow it down. You don't want constant reviewing. You want there to be kind of a trust in the officiating crew. You don't want to constantly undermine them. So I understand it from that perspective, but I do understand what you're saying. Like the idea that you just got it right, so why is it being taken away from me? I get it.
Yeah, because then they wouldn't have to worry about that, right? If they got it back for getting it right, you know, then it'd be on the refs to, like, stop getting it wrong, you know, and they could just hold, they keep using it if the refs keep getting it wrong over and over again. So it's weird to me. Like I get for slower sports why it make, like, I get that it's a faster sport, so you don't want to have a lot of these challenges going on, but it is kind of oddly non-intuitive that it has the same cost if they're right or they're wrong.
By the way, I'm a big fan of the green lights in the arena.
I think they can make it more dramatic. There should be big sirens that play and make a loud noise.
They should dim the lights.
All the lights go low except for like they put like spotlights on the refs.
Right. I like the idea of making it more dramatic. So big fan of the lights. If we could add on to it, like I'm in to the dramatics.
And then if the home team gets their challenge right, they should drop confetti.
I'm in. Go big or go home. Anything to make this more dramatic. Well, I think that's a good ending point for this podcast. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, and Stitcher. Again, we are now on the Blue Wire Sports Podcast Network. Go check out their podcast. They have some good stuff up there. So follow me on Twitter at SomaliNBA. Follow Forrest on Twitter at
DUNOTS. Do not.
Give us 5 stars on iTunes if you enjoyed the show. And yeah, guys, good night.
Nobody builds 5G like Verizon builds 5G because we're the engineers who built the most reliable network in America. And the more you do with 5G, the more building it right matters. The more your network matters. The more Verizon engineers going the extra mile matters. It's us pushing us. It's Verizon versus Verizon. 5G built right from America's most reliable network. Most reliable based on rankings from RootMetrics second half 2020 U.S. report of 3 mobile networks. Results may vary. Award is not an endorsement.